This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Some refugees from desperate situations around the world are fortunate enough to become accepted into the United States. But then what? If you've been in a war-torn area or a victim of torture, sure, you're glad to be safer, but now you're in a strange country. You likely don't speak English, you don't understand the bureaucracy, the medical system, and you're probably going to land in a sketchy neighborhood. Then there's the chance you're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder or depression or other issues. But you don't know that because you've never been diagnosed, and you might not even be familiar with the concept of PTSD or depression. Our next guests have taken it upon themselves to help with some of those challenges. Dr. Aresh Javanbach is the director of the Stress, Trauma, and Anxiety Research Clinic at Wayne State University's Department of Psychology. And Mohammed Al-Saud is a research assistant at the clinic. We first spoke with him back in April. Let's revisit that conversation now. So what prompted each of you to decide to work with refugees?
So we have this anxiety and trauma clinic at Wayne State University, and it's a research clinic. And Michigan hosts a large, used to host actually until a couple of years ago, a large group of refugees coming from the Middle East. One reason is that Michigan is a refugee-friendly state. At the same time, there's a large Arab community in Michigan. So it would feel more familiar with a lot of refugees to come to Michigan. So these refugees from Syria and Iraq have gone through very difficult situations, right? Situation in Syria before this was very stable, like here. Like one morning you wake up and you see that neighbors are being killed by other people that you don't even know. Your water is shut down. You don't have electricity. For day-to-day access to grocery or healthy water, you have to struggle. And you don't know if tomorrow you or one of your relatives or family members would be alive or not. And then if you get very lucky, you can get out of the country and be in a camp where you have to stay for a couple of years before you're vetted and you can come to a country like the United States. There was reports before this work that there's a high level of impact of traumatic experiences in refugees who are in Middle Eastern camps or in Syria. But we didn't have data about what's going on with them when they come to a safe country like America. So here they're far from the conflict zone. They have been away for about a couple of years. Some could argue that, well, so probably all the problems and issues and stresses are gone. But at the same time,
that stuff doesn't heal itself by itself.
Exactly. In our clinic, we have seen people who were traumatized years ago. They still carry the severe symptoms of trauma. So we decided to screen Syrian refugees and Iraqi refugees for usual common consequences of trauma and stress, including anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder. Before getting there, let me just quickly say what is post-traumatic stress disorder, because to a lot of people, it's a concept. As you mentioned, a lot of refugees would not probably even know what this is. It's a condition that happens when people are exposed to extreme life-threatening situations of trauma, such as war, assault, car accidents, rape, gunshots, robbery, these situations, which can lead to symptoms of always being anxious, always being on the alert. The brain wants to protect the person against that situation happening again. And nightmares, flashbacks, and being socially isolated, very difficult situation. That often comes with depression and anxiety.
I want to ask Mohammed, you've actually worked with these people before you came to the U.S. You've worked with refugees in other situations. What did you learn in those experiences that you're bringing to this work now?
Well, I started working with refugees in 2005. I'm originally from Iraq. Once I left Iraq to Jordan, there was a flood of displaced people moving to Jordan, trying to settle there or just as transient point. At the time, there were many organizations and American universities conducting research in the field of psychiatry. The main goal of the research at the time in 2005 and 2006 was understanding the acceptance level of having a mental issue, along with how accessible help for each refugee is available in case they need one. We worked over the period of 2 years. At the time, we interviewed approximately between 500 to 600 refugees. At the time, we were surprised by how they were accepting the fact that it's not a stigma to have mental illness, although it is a stigma to go public with it. So it was a matter of like the society point of view, more than the personal point of view for the disease or any issue they complain from.
Is that the case with the people you're working with now as well?
Yeah. At least my opinion.
Let's talk about some of the work that's actually happening. How many refugees have you assessed?
So Arab American Chaldean Council has clinics in Dearborn and Detroit metro area. Every refugee that walks into the United States has to do a physical health screening within the first month of their arrival. So our department had a good relationship with this nonprofit, ACC, and Mohammed and his team go to the ACC clinics every time a new refugee family comes in, and the doctor at the ACC tells them about this research study, and if they're interested, they will join our team for screening. We have been lucky that we have screened more than 94% or 95% of the refugees who were referred to us.
I'm sorry, what was the figure again?
94% of refugees.
Wow.
And that's important because it shows that it's a good representative of the total sample. So we screen for PTSD, anxiety, depression. We also look at some biological markers like genetics and inflammation. Unfortunately, the impact is high, very similar to what was found in the Middle East among refugees in the Middle East.
What kind of percentage?
1/3 of the adults screen positive for PTSD. That's comparable to Vietnam War veterans' lifetime PTSD rate. Nearly 50% screen positive for depression and anxiety. Same in children. In children, we don't see presentations of stress as much in the form of PTSD as we would see in adults, but we see more of anxiety. Nearly 60% of kids have high anxiety, and nearly 80% have separation anxiety, which makes it very difficult for a kid to want to separate from parents and go to school, go to explore, go to sleepovers, go to parties. So numbers are high.
You have a higher ratio of kids than adults, or how's that mix?
In terms of numbers?
Yeah.
Relatively similar. It seems like relatively each family has two kids. And these are families which most of these kids have both of their parents. So these are the luckiest kids, because a lot of kids lost a parent, lost a family member, lost both of their parents through the transition and through the war.
If you want a better idea about the numbers, we interviewed 125 families so far in phase one, which is in total 486 individuals. The flow of refugees has slowed down since last year.
Since Trump was elected. You
know. We were hoping to, our plan was to continue collecting data, and then with the new administration policies, the flow of refugees significantly slowed down.
So once you make an assessment, then what happens?
So one part is like showing the impact, because if, let's say, 2% of the people are impacted, among 1,000 refugees, you would have 20 people who would need care. If it's 30%, it would be 300 people who need care. So this is the first step in need assessment. Then it comes to intervention. So it's also good for science, right? Because we are looking at the genetic, epigenetics, inflammation markers, a lot of research that we do about trauma to know what are the underlying neurobiological mechanisms of trauma and how we can address them in treatment. The next step would be intervention. How do we want to help these people? Because, well, it's sad news that the impact is so high. But the good news is that we have treatments, we have interventions, we can change people's lives, because these are very debilitating situations. And with treatment, person can be very more able to assimilate and go through the stress of new environment. So we have launched an intervention work. Traditional psychotherapy or medication treatments would be very difficult in this population because, number one, acceptance of the stigma of mental illness or medications is difficult. Besides, we don't have enough skilled therapists who are fluent in the culture and language.
Right.
So we launched this study where we bring a family, a mom and a child, and we recently started adding dads. Moms do mindful yoga and kids do art and dance therapy. It's basically a collaboration of many different parties, people from art school in the university, our department, Samaritas, which is a social service that provides transportation for free for the refugees. And we have been seeing good effects. Actually, Mohammed has been involved on the field, and he can tell you some of the experiences he has had.
So what are you doing for the dads?
For the dads, we have a new thing going on right now, which is high-intensity interval training in an attempt to decide whether it's useful or not for relief of stress and anxiety and what's the effect of it.
So this art therapy, dance therapy, this high, what did you call it again? High-intensity interval training, okay. Is that as effective as counseling or medication?
So, number one is that, can you get the medication and counseling to this population? In general, we don't have enough therapists who are familiar with treatment of trauma and PTSD, even for American citizens. So, it will be much more complicated when you want to bring people who know the language and the culture. With these interventions, there's evidence from previous studies that they work, but those evidences are mostly qualitative. So we, because we are a research clinic, we are not only doing the intervention, but also brought a research component to this. So we measure the stress level before and after the interventions. We also look at inflammation markers, because inflammation is something which is in the body and in the brain when these conditions happen. I just was looking at some of our data because the first was the feasibility. Would we be even able to bring these families to this, into these interventions, as you mentioned? So how much is the acceptance? Acceptance has been actually good. It also helps them do community building and become friends. And gradually we had, like, in our first phase, has like 4 moms leave our intervention. Why? Because they found jobs, which was exciting to us. Anyway, so we have found decline in, we have enough numbers in children to look at the effects. We have had significant decline in distress and anxiety among children. Now we're looking at the adults.
Let's talk about the research, and I assume you've been publishing on this. What are your peers saying? I mean, this is fairly unique in the nation, right? And there are other populations of refugees around the nation. Are your peers looking at this and saying, okay, now we've got some direction?
Yes. So actually, other people are slowly joining our intervention and research, actually. So we had people, another researcher from our university, another department, joined us to now look at, like, intergenerational transfer of trauma, like kids who were born after migration while mom was pregnant during the transition. How did mom's stress affect the infant? We also have been talking to people in Toronto, our colleagues in Toronto, who are interested in implementing our intervention studies. Besides that, there's a National Psychiatric Genetic Consortium, which is trying to poll a large group of people who are traumatized from all different backgrounds to look at the genetic vulnerabilities. So we are the first Middle Eastern population that joined this effort to, because this is a very unique genetically and ethnic group that we don't know the differences in genetic vulnerability compared to Caucasian and African American population that we have mostly in those cohorts. We are also aware of other groups which are focusing on interventions and access to treatment.
So what's next for you guys?
So next is that we have established what was the impact of trauma when people came here. But then when you put a diagnosis for PTSD or depression on the person, it doesn't mean that they are marrying them to that diagnosis. That can change. So after a year, Mohammed and his team have started collecting data again on the same people to see what was the trajectory of symptoms. How did the symptoms in these people change, specifically kids, because childhood trauma is very important in adults' mental and physical health. And then we are looking at psychological, inflammation, genetics, and environmental factors which can impact that trajectory so that we can identify those factors which are more important to be priorities to address. Because in 10, 15, 20 years, this kid is going to be an American adult citizen, right? And do we want him to be a successful, productive member of the society who is symptom-free and can contribute? Or do we want them to be the person who carried this trauma throughout their adulthood and was impacted all these years by it?
Arash Javanbakh is the director of the Stress, Trauma, and Anxiety Research Clinic at Wayne State University. Mohammed Al Saud is a research assistant at the clinic. Thanks for coming in and telling us about your work.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
It was a pleasure.
The team over at Wayne State is trying to figure out whether alternative therapies for stress and anxiety, think exercise or breathing techniques, can help refugees who have resettled in Southeast Michigan. Around the time we first spoke with Dr. Arash Javanbakh and Mohammed Al Saud, stateside Sarah Leeson went to a yoga and movement therapy session at Hype Athletics in Dearborn Heights. She brought back this audio postcard.
So we're going to start in a seated posture, and just want you to take a breath in and breathing out. Just sitting up nice and tall and just noticing how you're feeling today. And the mantra I like to use for this to kind of anchor my mind down is, that was then, this is now. My name is Lisa Malinowski, and I am a yoga instructor and mindfulness educator. And today I'm here helping out with the project at Wayne State and just teaching yoga to these lovely women that are here.
And then slowly coming back down into hands and knees, tabletop. And then let's inhale, lift our hearts off the bellies. And exhale, pressing into your palms.
I teach in the sense that it's trauma-informed, right? So these women have experienced something that I have never experienced personally in my life, but it's a powerful program. I think the ability to have this tool as someone who has experienced possibly such high levels of trauma in their lives, and to be able to have this safe space and learn how to be okay with feelings and uneasiness and change, and that really might benefit from this and find some peace in their future.
I'm Jenna Spinay. I am a dance movement psychotherapist, and I hold the movement therapy sessions here.
We're gonna play musical chairs right here, so you might want to get out of
here. We play like 7-Up, like tag, and we play 11 games.
The first day was chaos and madness, as it always is, and really fragmented. And then over the weeks, I've just seen it increase exponentially each time, like the amount of community that we have in the space. And a lot of times they're introducing and requesting games that they remember playing at home, and then they'll teach them to each other and they'll play them together, and that's really lovely to see. And they're all movement games, of course, because you can play those anywhere. So that's been fun for me to learn and see, like, oh, I know that game, but I know it by a different name, and oh, the rules are kind of different, but let's play it together. And sometimes it brings up stories from home, and I remember one time when we played this game, so that's really nice to see.
My name is Ali Sayed. I'm the founder and CEO of Hype Athletics Community. You know, we all study human development. You have, you know, the mental, the cognitive, the physical, and the emotional, as well as the spiritual. So there's five major components. And physical development is definitely one that, you know, kids lack, especially in their upbringing. If they're in the middle of a war, you know, there's nothing that they can do for fun, you know. And that sort of takes their mind away from their negative thoughts and whatnot. But, you know, I've definitely have been able to witness the smiles on the kids' face, the excitement from even when they receive a snack to when they're going on the basketball courts to play basketball. The kids that I've had a chance to meet are just, you know, they're just innocent. You can tell. They just want to have fun like every other kid, you know. Just the way that they're gonna get to that fun is going to be a little bit of a challenge, but we'll make it happen.